I think there may be an advanced case of it. The Postal Service in some ways reminds me of New York City in the 60s. John Lindsay, very liberal Republican mayor, and some others. And they couldn't give the people big pay raises, but they gave them a tremendous benefits package. And in effect, they were, you know, the critics said they were mortgaging the future. And they said that a lot of state and local government politicians did this in dealing with their public employee unions, that they'd say, we can't give you much in the way of a pay raise, but here's the benefit package you're going to have. And by then, by the time that bill came due, it was 20 years, and the people who had approved it were retired, and it wasn't their money to begin with, you know,
right,
like a private sector situation. Postal Service and the TVA, Tennessee Valley Authority, I guess are the most unionized outfits in the federal government. Now, in the private sector, in the white-collar part of government, unions always talk about how many people they represent.
Mm-hmm.
They say, we represent 550,000. Well, maybe so in a bargaining unit, but they only have maybe 90,000 members.
Okay.
So they're not getting dues from most of the people they represent. So the numbers are inflated, but they're not particularly accurate as far as income.
Mm-hmm.
Postal unions, I think 8 out of 10 eligible people are actually members of one of the unions, the APWU, the letter carriers, the mail handlers, postmasters organization is very strong. So they're very well organized. They're very well unionized. And on Capitol Hill, they used to call them the shock troops, the Marines of the Federal Civil Service.
Wow.
In other words, the postal workers' unions would go in and get these benefits, and the white-collar feds would sort of get them in consequence.
Mm-hmm.
Once they became a private corporation or a semi-government corporation, they're going to be on their own. They're going to make their own money. They're going to run it like a business. But one of the things they did to get the unions to buy in was to pay a much larger share of their health insurance premiums. And in the 1970s, that was one thing. In the 21st century, with the premiums we're having, that's a considerable chunk of change.
Yeah.
The postal workers' health premiums, thanks to the contribution of the Postal Service itself, are about half what they are for somebody who works for Interior or Justice or Defense.
Mm-hmm.
That gap is going to continue to grow as health premiums go up. Postal Service, of course, says one way out of this, and it's in their press release announcing their losses. They said they had taken steps, I believe, to change their health system, and nobody quite knows what that means, but some people have taken that to mean that they want to set up a separate health plan strictly for postal workers.
Yeah.
And that scares a lot of postal workers to death, because although people complain about the FEHBP, the federal program, just try to take them out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the best. So I think the Postal Service is the rest of the federal government on steroids because of these union contract agreements.
Yeah. That's kind of where I was headed. The idea that if we look at the Postal Service, we can see where the rest of the government might be 5 years from now or 10 years from now if we're not careful.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think, and you know, this is not pro or con, but most of the cutbacks that we've had in the economy, or a lot of them, have been in state and local governments. You know, the contrary, the federal government hasn't had any reductions in force, but it has happened in the private sector. And what's happened is you have these rebellions in states like Wisconsin and Ohio, and even heavily unionized states where people are saying that the public employee payroll is just too much. We didn't sign on for this, and they've had to make some drastic cuts in those. I don't think that's going to happen in the federal government, because now everything seems to be going against federal workers.
I tease you off the air about some of the things that you put in your column from time to time, and it's meant in a teasing way, because your column today is a demonstration, I think, of the kind of journalist that you really are. You connected two dots that I had not seen anybody connect yet. That's the highway transportation bill that's being debated in Congress right now that includes a tremendous impact on federal employee pay and benefits, and the Washington Post story about members of Congress getting transportation benefits that wind up improving their own financial interests or those of their families. And we have a link to the Post story in your column today. It's really, it's dirty. It's really the only word I can think of for it.
You know, they had the first day they had 30 or 40 pictures of members of Congress. They came in all shapes, sizes, political parties. Second day's feature, same thing. And this is this huge number of household names of people who had highway projects going near a business that their son owned, mm-hmm. or near some resort. This is not helping their constituents. This is helping themselves.
Yeah.
This is, I've got a mountain resort somewhere and let's run a highway to it.
Uh-huh.
And this is shocking stuff. I mean, the Post is to be commended on this. If they don't win some kind of prize for it, I'll be very surprised.
Yeah, I don't make it a habit to plug the work of other news organizations, but you really need to read that, preferably linked up through your column on federalnewsradio.com, because it's just blatant. I mean, it's crooked, and I can't think of any other way to describe it. And Senator Shelby of Alabama described it this way. Well, at least I always disclosed it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that somehow makes it better, because I announced to everybody that I was directing federal taxpayer dollars to projects that benefited me personally.
That's like, I shot him, but I said I was going to.
I warned everybody before I shot him dead.
Yeah, I love. No, you know, that coming on top of this debate over whether they're going to stop insider trading. I mean, this is you couldn't make this stuff up.
Right.
This is unbelievable. And I saw the other day where Congress is down to a 10% approval rating, and I'd like to meet these 10% and see where they're coming from.
Yeah, what's wrong with those people? No news on the transportation bill, how it would affect federal workers. Probably nothing to happen. The good news is Congress is so screwed up that it's not likely to happen.
You know, as you may have noticed, my desk is a little cluttered.
We need to post a picture of that on the website.
Julia Ziegler did one time.
Okay. Well, let's get
it
up.
People said stop. They said don't do this. But I yanked some stuff out the other day, and it was dire warnings of what the super commission was going to do.
Yes.
And it was December 31st, the world was going to end. It didn't.
Uh-huh.
Looking at the Bowles Simpson group that was going to come up with these recommendations, the president was behind them. Didn't happen. They did the recommendation, nothing. And if you just look at last year, look, I think there are five or six super examples of that. You know, the world's to end tomorrow.
Yeah.
Didn't happen.
Yeah.
So, some of us are getting a bit cynical about Congress meeting its deadlines.